Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Lawson Bader with Donors Trust, and welcome to another conversation with some of the institutional recipients of our Growth and Resilience Project. Just as a reminder, the project was established with funds from our Whitney Ball Memorial Fund, as well as contributions from donors both inside and outside the Donors Trust client network. To date, we have granted about $500,000 to 12 organizations, several of which are featured today. We have had, as I mentioned before, a pretty significant response to this project, and we have dozens and dozens of worthy proposals that we are still considering based on the remaining available funds, and frankly, our ability to raise additional support for the effort. I'll speak to that just at the end of the call. The purpose of the project is to focus on policy as a fundamental part of any recovery from our current challenges. We see that kind of a response as important and perhaps even equally humanitarian as the responses that we see from many large foundations and companies when it comes to, say, worker relief or elder care or food and medical supply banks and so forth. We're featuring this morning representatives from six organizations, the California Policy Center and Will Swain, Texas Public Policy Foundation and David Ballot, Tax Foundation with Scott Hodge, the Beacon Center of Tennessee with Justin Owen, the Fundación para el Avance de la Libertad, excuse me, with Roxana Nicula, and Free the People with Matt Kibbe. It's a diverse group representing, frankly, diverse but important approaches to addressing regulatory, government overreach, barriers of entry, healthcare, and this kind of a thing. Each of them will speak for 3 minutes on his or her respective project, and then we will entertain questions from those of you on the call. As a reminder, if you are on Zoom, please use the Q&A feature at the bottom of the screen. This call is being recorded. I want you all to know that, and we will make it available to any interested parties at a later time. With that, let us actually begin with Will, and then we'll just move through Will to David, to Scott, to Justin, to Roxana, and to Matt, and then I'll return to make sure we've got a time for some questions. So Will, I turn this over to you.
Thank you, Lawson. Thanks to Donors Trust for this opportunity and for the grant. It comes at a really important time. Greetings, I should say, from California, where the lockdown is just gotten a little more lockier. This morning, the governor announced that he is shutting down all California beaches. This is likely to turn out the surf crowd, which is just about everybody, including my 80-year-old mother. So the other thing that the economic shutdown has done, of course, is produce a cascade effect for local governments as they've watched the oxygen they need every single day, that is sales tax revenue, fall off the cliff. They've also had serious shortfalls in their public employee pension funds. And California Policy Center has proposed, and Donors Trust has generously helped us get this initiative started. We've proposed working with local government officials in various communities that are specifically affected, that's really particularly affected by this economic shutdown, and confronting the possibility, the very likelihood, in fact, of a Chapter 9 bankruptcy. Now, in California, the way you handle a Chapter 9 bankruptcy is typically you tell the judge that you must protect government unions and the bondholders can take a haircut and you want to raise taxes and send out more debt. We're working through a network of local officials that CPC created called CLEO, California Local Elected Officials, to identify really, let's say, philosophically aligned public officials who are interested in free markets and free minds and individual liberty. And we're working with those officials to help guide them through Chapter 9 bankruptcy, because in federal court, a bankruptcy judge can help a local government unwind the injurious collective bargaining agreements that have really led to the most pernicious financial problems in California. Let me just back up one step and point out, at the end of this most recent bull market that was historic in terms of its length, California's public employee pension funds were still only about 70% funded. In some places, it's much worse than that in California. And right now, as property taxes are likely to plummet, and as I said, the market is down and sales tax revenue is down, now is the time when we could actually get in and unwind some of the worst collective bargaining agreements. But California law specifically prohibits any attempt to reverse a pension fund deal, a post-retirement employee benefit project, that is injurious to the local government. We have what we call the California rule, which is our state Supreme Court stepping in to say you can't do anything that would harm a government union. So in Chapter 9, we're counting on federal judges to actually step in and do for us what we could not do for ourselves. We've got three working groups, attorneys who are pro bono, working on Chapter 9 specifically. We've got finance analysts, our own, and we're working with those in Reason. And of course, our local officials group. This is a scalable project. Again, if we can identify just a couple of successful models in Chapter 9 bankruptcy coming out of this COVID virus, probably early this fall, we'll be able to set up a model for others to follow in the state and our colleagues in places like New York, Illinois, New Jersey, Connecticut. We're hoping that they'll see the blueprint and perhaps follow along. So again, could not do this without you guys, and so grateful for your support. Thank you.
Good morning. Yes, thank you again to Donors Trust and to all of you all. We cannot do what we do without your generosity. So it's we're very excited to be able to talk today and tell you what we're looking to do to expand and extend liberty throughout the country. My name is David Ballot. I'm with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. The name of our center is Right on Healthcare. We work not only in Texas and are very close to the governor's office, we spend a lot of time in D.C. and we're working with the administration. We've contributed to the plan by the Republican Study Committee, and I personally advise a number of senators and House representatives. Texas Public Policy Foundation's healthcare center is also expanding its footprint into other states, and we're working with think tanks in Alaska and in Montana as well, and we're looking to further expand and look to see how we can impact good healthcare policy at both federal and state levels. My background, I come from industry. I was a hospital administrator and CEO for 20 years and decided that I couldn't personally contribute to the problem any longer and needed to be a part of the solution. And I found myself in the position that I'm in now, and I couldn't be more pleased to use my expertise to push forward those things that I know will make healthcare more affordable, more accessible, and more efficient. So I really look at this from the perspective of patient and how we can make this much more simple, because it absolutely can be. What we're looking to do at the foundation and with Right on Healthcare is we're looking at eliminating or making permanent many of these waivers on needless regulations. We've heard again and again from all levels of government that we need to loosen, suspend, or eliminate regulations that allow doctors to take care of patients. That should spark in your mind, were they needed in the first place? I would hold to the answer that probably not. So we're looking to make many of those permanent. One of the best ones that has resulted in a great development in healthcare is the expansion of telemedicine and the expanded use of telemedicine. People are, if there's anything good that could have come from such a terrible pandemic, it's that people are becoming more accustomed to that model. And it really is going to contribute to making healthcare more accessible for those that have had difficulty getting to physicians and facilities. We're also going to work to make direct primary care something that is more part of the mainstream. It's a growing phenomenon. It's if you think in terms of Netflix for your primary care doctor or even your specialist, it's monthly membership. It's not concierge medicine, and we have plenty of research on our website at texaspolicy.com that will give you an explanation of what the model is and how it will contribute to more affordable and accessible care. But we would like to provide this kind of model for Medicaid beneficiaries. Currently, our SNAP program preloads a card for someone to go to a grocery store, and there are no in-network and out-of-network grocery stores, so we don't feel that that should be the case for healthcare delivery. But we would like to have these Medicaid beneficiaries who tend to use and overuse the emergency room to be able to have a relationship with a physician so that we could have the overall cost of Medicaid decrease. Something that we have worked for in the past and that we are looking to extend here in the future is allowing physicians to dispense and deliver medications within their offices at the point of care. And we've done a good bit of research on that. Texas is one of four or five states that does not have this, and we're looking to see this become more permanent. And then finally, transparency. Everybody wants to have the ability to use their own money, but that really doesn't mean anything unless we actually know the real prices. So that will be another push for us, both at the state and the federal level. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Scott Hodge, president of the Tax Foundation. Let me just first thank Donors Trust, like others have, for supporting our COVID-19 Response Center and really recognizing the incredible work that my team has done covering this crisis in Washington. Our analysis of the COVID relief policies has attracted over 2.5 million visits to our website in just the past few weeks and generated over 3,700 media citations. One of our individual donors sent me a note last week calling us the first responders on the economic front lines. It's pretty nice. Well, our team has actually already pivoted from analyzing the immediate needs of the economy to providing thought leadership on what the economy needs once the crisis is lifted. And I see a couple of threats on the policy horizon that we're having to deal with. The first threat is that politicians are going to enact a bunch of short-term gimmicks like cash for clunkers or shovel-ready infrastructure projects that do absolutely nothing for economic growth. So we got ahead of that debate last week with a new study that outlines the policies that Washington and the states need to take to clear a path, the path of tax obstacles for economic growth. And we've been working behind the scenes with the economic team at the White House and senior members of Congress to model a number of pro-growth tax policies that they're considering for the next recovery package. But history shows that crises like these lead to more spending, which leads to bigger government, which inevitably leads to higher taxes. And there's already talk for the need for a European-style value-added tax, a carbon tax, or more wealth taxes in order to pay for the trillions that have been spent to prop up the economy. And we'll be using our dynamic tax model to analyze these and other policies so that people understand the costs and the trade-offs of higher taxes. A good example of that is yesterday. We released our dynamic analysis of Joe Biden's $3.8 trillion tax increase plan. We found that it will not only reduce the size of the economy by 1.5%, but it will kill nearly 600,000 jobs. And that's clearly not what the economy needs right now. And Biden even doubled down on that yesterday when he announced that he would boost the estate tax rate to 45% in order to pay for his paid family leave project. So it shows the disconnect on the left in their understanding how taxes impact the economy and what's needed. Well, the Tax Foundation's mission and our job is to arm our allies with the best economic data and analysis so that we can move the country forward towards pro-growth policies, not bigger government. And thanks to Donors Trust and all of you who have provided us with the resources so that we can have the best tools and talent to deliver on that mission. So thanks again.
Good morning. I'm Justin Owen with the Beacon Center of Tennessee. And first, I want to thank you too for this tremendous opportunity, both Donors Trust and each of you on the call. Due to your support, we've been able to pivot and seize on something we otherwise would not have had the resources to do. So thank you. As we geared up for the legislative session to start this June, our governor's chief of staff called me and asked, what big, bold idea can the governor propose that will most quickly get Tennesseans back to work and jumpstart our economy? So thanks to your support, we've been able to develop a package to slash red tape and do just that. The central piece of this will be a regulatory sandbox or innovation waiver policy. We've seen this in other states, particularly applied to things like fintech or insurance regulation, where old outdated insurance models don't make sense for new business ideas or new innovations. And so essentially those businesses are exempted from those old regulatory regimes. And we know there's going to be a myriad of business and industry opportunities shifting from places like China, potentially, certainly for more heavy-handed states like my friend Will's in California. And there are going to be new business models, ideas, and innovations that come about that we've never even dreamed of as a result of the pandemic. So we want Tennessee to be a magnet for those innovators. And if they come here, we want to give them the opportunity to play in their regulatory sandbox free from all of those excessive regulations. And as a result of that, can be successful. And so to that end, we plan to pursue the most extensive innovation waiver policy in the nation. In addition, we want to make Tennessee the fastest state in the nation to obtain a business license. It really shouldn't take more than 24 hours. We want to seek to reduce occupational licensing barriers across the board. We'll have a proposal to reduce those regulations in more than 50 different occupations. So all of those Tennesseans who have lost their jobs due to the pandemic will have access to more job opportunities than they've ever had before. And finally, we want to make sure that local governments are also innovation friendly. We want to make sure that they issue permits in a timely manner, that they have sensible zoning and home-based business regulations and friendly tax policies. Taken together, this package that we present to our governor will position Tennessee to lead the nation in innovation freedom, will become a magnet for job creation, and help get Tennesseans back to work just like they've asked us to do.
No.
This won't impact just Tennesseans. When we are successful, we can be a model, an inspiration for other states to follow and become their own leaders in innovation. So thank you again to Donors Trust and all of you who are standing with them to support important projects like these. You really are making a difference.
Hello, everyone. I'm Roxana Nicula, chair of the Foundation for the Advancement of Liberty in Madrid, Spain. Our Private Healthcare Saves Lives project seeks an urgent deregulation, tax cuts, and advocacy initiative in response to the COVID-19 crisis and to its abuse by more interventionist policies. Our country has been hit hard by this pandemic. The fact that we already lost more than 30,000 lives and counting shows the dangers of government meddling in our healthcare sector. Spain has very restrictive laws regarding the commerce of medical supplies, medicines with or without prescription, and access to this labor market by medical professionals from abroad. This increases artificially the price and prohibits free trade. Because of that, during this crisis, we couldn't respond faster and better. We lacked medical supplies and specialized human resources. There are thousands of health foreign professionals prevented from working because of the bureaucratic hurdles, forcing them to wait for a minimum of 3 years for their degrees to be validated. The only people who have the liberty to choose between state-run services and private healthcare are the civil servants. We have a unique window of opportunity now that goes beyond ideological or nationalistic barriers. We are confident that we can defend our private healthcare sector by presenting practical solutions for more free market. Why now? Because we need it as a society to survive. How are we going to achieve our goals? By conducting a series of sound research with pragmatic solutions, and by presenting our findings and solutions in a way that can be easily understood by health, regional and national authorities, politicians, mass media, general opinion, and medical industry. We know that politicians fear, to some extent, the public opinion. We plan to do campaigns about the urgent necessity of these reforms to save lives. Our research on regional tax competitiveness, on economic freedom of the Spanish cities, are media darlings and are used as reference by different regional and local administrations in policy reforms. We are a think tank and an act tank. We foster grassroots organizations for specific causes like the defense of the taxpayers. We plan to launch the only association that will defend the private healthcare in Spain. We have access to a wide network of organizations from all over the country with whom we cooperate closely. Our aim is to begin countering the state narrative against the private healthcare system. We seek to generate a favorable current for our private healthcare. Thank you very much for your generous support. Those of you who decided to help or are thinking of supporting our work, please know that your help will make an important difference in our fight for the liberalization of our healthcare industry. Thank you again.
Hey everybody, Matt Kibbe with Free the People, and I have to echo the praise for this particular project and sort of the proactive nature of funding these sorts of things, because I think this is the most threatening on our liberties of anything that I've seen government do in our lifetimes, which is why my organization, Free the People, got involved very early. We started publishing content and videos starting in March 16th. And we felt like it was really important to step up and do these things. Donors Trust and your community of donors has funded a specific project starring our creative director, Sam Martin, Freedom Over Fear, which is a series of videos that specifically focus on the civil liberties side of the equation. We know government action is doing all sorts of damage, but there are historical examples of how these things have destroyed our liberties in fundamental ways in history. So he's done three videos so far. The first was on civil liberties generally. We looked at economic liberties, we looked at property rights, and those three videos so far have performed insanely well. Traffic on our website is up 500%, and generally on our social media platforms, there's a real hunger for this content, and there really wasn't this side of the story being told, so we're proud of that. Sam is an actor. He's young, he's articulate, he's everything that I'm not, which is why we featured him. There'll be two more of these coming out, one on religious liberties and another on, wait for it, the comment made by the Raleigh Police Department describing peaceful protests petitioning your government for grievances as a non-essential activity. So we're going to focus on free speech on that one. Above and beyond those projects, we're also looking at doing something with Sam called Liberty Beats. It's essentially beat poetry that's going to be put to music and talking about all of the beautiful things that free people are doing during this time of the pandemic to actually help, to hold up the healthcare system, to make sure that people are fed, to look for innovative ways to solve problems without the government dictating from the top down what we do. It's supposed to be uplifting. It's supposed to be happy. It's particularly attractive to young people who are trying to figure this stuff out. And finally, our executive producer and artist, Matt Battaglia, is producing something that's going to look more like 1984 meets The Walking Dead, looking at some of these super creepy proposals to have COVID ID cards, to use biometric tracing of human behavior, and all of these things that big government wants to do to dictate who is free to do what. We got to get this stuff done. And I really appreciate all of the support we've gotten. We're just going. We're going to keep going. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Matt. Thank you to everybody. I have a couple of questions for you, but I also want to make sure I follow up with one that's been in the queue. Will, this is specifically for you. How soon do you expect to see the first Chapter 9 bankruptcy in California?
Financial analysts, and I should mention that all this came out of our local elected officials network. We had a meeting about 3 weeks ago. State Senator John Morlock, who's the only CPA in the state house, predicts that we'll see the first ones late summer or early fall. He suggests, and our public finance analyst suggests, that we'll see about a dozen before the end of the year.
Thanks. Justin and David, sort of for both of you, you know, one of the issues here is there's a lot that we are saying and trying to do, but we also want the opportunity and the necessity for, frankly, politicians to respond, some of whom are probably like-minded, many of whom maybe are not. And so the question to each of you, since what you are doing is also replicable at other states, to what extent are you comfortable or confident that politicians are in fact going to listen and pay attention and perhaps be willing to put aside some of their traditional biases?
Well, I think a lot of politicians are starved for content in a sense right now. They want ideas and they want to show that they're helping solve the problem. And if we don't step up and offer solutions of freedom and free markets, they're going to get those solutions elsewhere, which are going to involve more big government programs. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to step in and offer those solutions when they're really looking for them. And then as we show success, then we're going to create this competition among states that want to do the same. Tennessee is a magnet for these big innovative companies that come here or start here and are successful, other states want a bite of that. And so they're going to race towards that competition. We see this with tax policy all the time. Different states will compete against each other for residents and for businesses. And I think that we'll see the same after this pandemic. And so that's why it's important for certain states to lead that can now. And that puts pressure on politicians in other states. Even if they're not quite ready yet, it puts that additional pressure on them to do it down the road.
Yeah. David, anything to add?
Yeah, you know, our mission is to educate and to influence lawmakers, but I think it's important to do that with the general public as well. And we can get very specific and targeted with those lawmakers that we think that we can get on our side by going to their constituents and educating and influencing them so they can in turn do that with their elected officials. It has been effective in getting us in the door and to have very good conversations so that we can get things done, because when they understand that the people that vote for them care, they care a little bit more.
Got it. Scott, for you, we've obviously seen some conversations about sort of federal tax policy in the sense that the extensions on when we can file our federal taxes and so forth. Do you have a sense that governments also realize that when this is over, whatever over means, that there is going to be significant pressure from a revenue standpoint because of how much has been expended by governments? And are they as focused on not just revenue questions with tax policy, but on what expenses perhaps might also not be involved in? And are you looking at both the expense and the revenue side when you're examining all of this?
Generally, we do focus on the tax side, but you cannot ignore the spending side of this equation. You know, the private economy has done an awful lot of sacrificing at the behest of government during this shutdown. And I think once the coast is clear, it's time for government to sacrifice itself. At the federal level, for instance, there are dozens of programs in the federal budget that were created during World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, the Korean War, et cetera, the Great Society programs. There's all this alluvial layers of government that have been created over time for past crises. And it's time that we go back and try to eliminate a lot of those and focus on what's important for now. The tax code is similarly littered with all kinds of provisions that were put in there for past crises that are no longer needed. We need to reform the tax code so that the economy can rebound on its own rather than trying to be guided by political influence.
Thanks. Roxana, for you, we've got a question from the group. Most of Europe experiencing similar problems as Spain when it comes to some of these medical regulations. Is Spain worse, or are you all sort of in the same boat? And meaning, to the extent that you are successful, other countries can follow suit.
Spain, unfortunately, is a bad example. It's one of the worst example in Europe, inside the European Union. We have regulations that are very restrictive, and in other countries of the European Union, it isn't occurring like this. Especially this third part of the European Union, they are more open to free trade. They don't have those hurdles like we have here. That's why we hope that Spain can be an example, for instance, for France, which are kind of similar, but even they are not so worse like we are, or for countries like Italy, maybe, and to set an example and show that we can take advantage of this crisis to produce more freedom in our healthcare system.
Got it. No, thank you. Matt, last question to you, and then I need to wrap this up, but you have a particular passion for young people. Well, young people in sort of that 25 to 30 range have experienced some interesting market disruptions, financially speaking, of the last 15 years. Do you see that as an opportunity, or is that also gonna be a unique challenge because they're perhaps a bit more cynical about it?
Well, I think it's both, and it is absolutely an opportunity, but it's also a problem we have to solve when we're speaking to young people about sort of these top-down command and control things that are sold as things that are going to keep us safe. They have to see the unseen things, and that's why we're using Sam so much in our videos, because he speaks in a language and has a persona that I think directly connects with them, but it's also sort of the style of the videos we're producing. We want this stuff to be cool because we think video is kind of a gateway drug to reading and thinking and looking at the economic consequences of shutting down mass sections of the economy or telling people that they can't speak freely anymore. So yes, we have to, we don't have a choice.
Yeah, I hear young people use this thing called the internet. I'm not sure what that is, so.
It's.
Let me just say thank you to Will and David and Scott and Justin, Roxana and Matt and your groups. We appreciate the opportunity to hear from you. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we have had a very strong response to this project from all the various groups that are being very creative in how they're having to redirect capital and intellectual resources to address some of these problems. And we do want to fund more of them, but our resources are just as scarce in many ways. And so we've hit pause temporarily when it comes to new proposals so that the committee can sift through what we have and make sure we have our priorities. It's important to remember that while not all groups are gonna wind up receiving a grant from the Growth and Resilience Project, we are trying to support a much larger effort. Really a movement that's quite global, not just local. And so all of the projects that you've heard from today, as well as past weeks, and then the ones that are frankly sitting in front of the selection committee are all very interrelated. And that's really what we're trying to do with this project is recognize that by helping one, we are actually helping the others. And so the more that we can do, the more that you can do in partnering with this project by contributing directly to it or directly to these organizations is not only appreciated, but frankly, very necessary. We will continue to keep you up to date on our activities. If anybody is interested in the master list of the summaries that we have of the proposals to date, or would like more information about a specific group, please make sure you contact us. We are very happy to share. And with that, and a rainy day in the DC area, I wish you my best. Stay safe, stay busy, and stay free. Thank you.